or they turn into cancer. But I didn't want one. Ick. Then my wife finally said, I know you're rationalizing that you don't need a colonoscopy, but you're being selfish. There's me, there are our kids, and you now have a grandson. Lots of people want you to be around for a long time. When you think about it that way, are you really saying that getting a colonoscopy is just too much of a bother? Well, yes, in so many words, that was what I had been saying. So I got a colonoscopy. It was a non-event. It was even kind of fun to fast for a day. That's another thing no one tells you about goals. You may want it to be one way, the way that lets you pursue anything you want without regard to money or health or relationships, but it's the other way. And it always will be. Just ask anyone who ignored the basics in his life, it's almost always men, to pursue a goal, only to feel empty and hollow because the trophy on the mantle came at too high a cost. Happiness requires evenly balancing your multiple non-negotiable goals, blending in a negotiable goal where appropriate, and never, ever forgetting to self-evaluate along the way to ensure the balance never gets out of whack. For brief periods of time, it's okay if that balance is off. But do that for long, and everything falls apart. Your motivation, your confidence, your small successes, and ultimately, your happiness. Because success isn't truly success unless you're happy. So, yeah, Maslow had his shit together. And so will you. With my sermon complete and sitting comfortably in the choir, let's look at the real requirements of a great goal. 1. The best goals make Maslow, and therefore you, happy. To make it simple, answer these two questions. Are you comfortable financially? I know comfortable means different things to different people. For now, let's define comfortable as able to afford to pay your bills on time, eat healthy, not extravagant, healthy food, provide for your family's basic needs, and consistently put aside a little money for retirement. Comfortable means you're not constantly worried about money and you don't constantly think about money. If you're constantly worried about or thinking about money, your first goal must be to generate more income, because money clearly matters a lot to you, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. If you are comfortable financially, then are you relatively fit and healthy? Fitness and health is another subjective category. My friend Jeremiah Bishop, a professional mountain biker, doesn't feel fit unless he is winning races. Of course, that's unrealistic for most of us. For now, let's define fit in a few key ways. 1. Are you comfortable with your body? If you refuse to wear a bathing suit or bikini on the beach, then you don't feel fit. If you can't perform the physical activities you want to perform or used to perform, and that bothers you, then you don't feel fit. If you are overweight and out of shape and on the road to major health problems, and though you may be good at putting that out of your mind, if you're honest with yourself, you know that's you, then you're not fit. But don't think of becoming fit and healthy as avoiding a negative. Think of becoming fit and healthy as a massive positive. Feeling comfortable in your own skin and being able to do the things you want to do is not only fun, it provides confidence and self-esteem that spill over into every other area of your life. Feeling fit and healthy isn't a luxury. Feeling fit and healthy is a basic need. Make sure you're taking care of your basic needs first. Otherwise, no matter how much money you may want to achieve another goal you choose, you won't. You won't have the energy. If one of these basic needs isn't being met, you will never get to harness the power of the feedback loop of success, where each small success gives you the motivation you need to keep going. That virtuous cycle where success leads to motivation, leads to more success, leads to more motivation, leads to more success, will never start turning because you'll be distracted by greater needs. And even if you aren't distracted, you'll feel guilty and selfish for putting so much effort into one aspect of your life while a basic need goes unmet. Make Maslow happy, and you will definitely be happier. 2. Your goal must benefit you on multiple levels. Every goal should support multiple aspects of your life. Say you've decided you need to be more active, but your health is relatively poor, and you have to start slowly. And say you've always enjoyed gardening. You could buy a treadmill and stare at the wall while you walk, or you could plant a small garden. You could work in your garden. You could go to a local arboretum and walk the paths to get ideas for what you would like to plant. You could spend time outside rather than inside. You'll enjoy the exercise. You'll look forward to the exercise. You'll get more active while enjoying a hobby. And the virtuous cycle of success, both in being more active and in watching your garden thrive, will motivate you to do more. I realize that's a simple example, so let's go to the other end of the spectrum. Kirk Hammett, the Metallica guitarist, was having dinner with his friend David Caron. They were reminiscing about working together in the past when David helped Kirk design his line of signature amplifiers for Randall Amplifiers. They decided they should do something new together and chose to start an effects pedal company. Guitar pedals change the sound a guitar makes. Think Keith Richards' fuzz tone on Satisfaction or Kirk's wah on, well, almost any of his guitar solos. Do something new together is a great goal, but it's only one goal. Start an effects pedal company is a nice addition, but Kirk extended it a lot further. He doesn't want to just make pedals. He loves the process of dreaming up new sounds and seeing them come to life. He loves asking other guitarists for feedback. He loves asking other guitarists what sounds they would like to hear and then finding ways to make those sounds come to life. He loves applying new sounds to the music Metallica makes. Starting a business was also a way to express his creativity, connect with other people, and dive even deeper into something he loves. Music. I've totally become obsessed with pedals again, Kirk told me. What I would love to do is to create a pedal that's like the wah pedal or the whammy pedal, something that becomes a go-to for a certain sound. That's what I want to find, and I believe we can do that. Want to land more media opportunities? Developing a better delivery and presence will help, but who gets media opportunities? Experts. Become an expert in your field and you'll have something original or insightful to say, and your delivery and presence will naturally improve. Content trumps delivery every time. When you're an expert, you'll find it a lot easier to get booked. In fact, the media will seek you out. Want to build an amazing network? Don't think in terms of building a network. Build a list of key individual contacts. Think about every key area your business depends on: supplies, products, professional services, marketing, media, etc. Then work hard to build a strong relationship with one person in each of those areas. Build a connection with a lawyer, an accountant, the shipping clerk at your supplier's warehouse, your FedEx driver, an influential analyst. Make it your goal to establish a key contact in each area of your business, with a person who won't just return your calls, but will also enjoy hearing from you. And you'll naturally build an amazing network. When your goal benefits you in only one way, it's much easier to quit, especially when the goal you set is something you want but do not need to do. When your goal benefits you in only one way, you get far fewer daily jolts of motivation from small successes. When your goal works on multiple levels, you become what you do much more quickly because it informs so many aspects of your life. Even the most specific and unusual goals can benefit you in a variety of ways. All you have to do is look for them. 3. Your goal must be unquestionably measurable. I left this requirement until last for a simple reason. The best goals usually start with a vague desire. Get in better shape, lose weight, make more money, start a business, change professions, be happier. But then get distilled into a clear, specific mission. Get in better shape becomes complete the Greensboro Spartan Race or finish the Luray Sprint Triathlon, or qualify for the Southern Regional CrossFit Competition, or run the DC Marathon. Lose weight becomes lose 30 pounds. Make more money becomes, well, a specific financial target you wish to reach. You get the point. The best goals are binary. They're so specific you can't help but know whether you have achieved them or not. They're also based on an activity, not a hard-to-quantify state of mind or state of being. Better shape means nothing. Run the DC Marathon means not just running any marathon, easier or harder, but running the Marine Corps Marathon held in Washington, D.C. Fuzzy goals are meaningless. The best goals are goals you can see and taste and visualize in great detail, because they're based on a real accomplishment and not a vague statement of intent. Now let's choose your goal. By now you may have already chosen your first goal. Simply thinking about the process of setting goals may have helped you settle on yours. If not, take some time to decide what you want to accomplish first. Just remember, if you are in financial straits or relatively poor physical condition, your goal must help you overcome that challenge. And if you're really struggling, just reach back and pick a goal you've had for a long time. Then you get a twofer. Not only will you achieve a huge goal, but you'll also eliminate a regret you've held not so dear for a long time. Then, once you have your goal, you're ready to create a process that will ensure you achieve your goal. I have a number you can choose from, and all of them work. Chapter 4.5. Wishing and hoping is the most unrealistic approach of all. I know, I said we were ready to stop talking and start doing, but there is one last thing about goals that we need to discuss. It's so important, so foundational, it deserves its own chapter. In the dictionary, the word idea is categorized as a noun. But idea should really be a verb, because an idea does not actually exist until you turn your inspiration into action. I should know. I've had plenty of ideas, but acted on few of them. For example, when I was graduating from college, the fitness boom was still in its infancy. I know, I'm old, but hey, someday you will be too. When companies like Nautilus introduced the first widely available weight training machines, strength training started to gain appeal for the average person. Layer in aerobics classes and Easter egg spandex combinations, and millions of people started to work out. I was in New York when I saw an early Nautilus demo. I remember thinking, there's a real opportunity here. I should open a gym. I thought about it a lot. Scouted locations, talked to manufacturers and lenders. But thinking and planning was all I ever did. 30 years later, I still feel a twinge of regret whenever I go to Planet Fitness. The same is true with computers. I owned one of the first K-Pro 2 portables. It weighed about 25 pounds, but technically it was portable. I was far from a programmer, but I did know more about computers than many people, and when IBM-compatible computers started to hit the market, I thought seriously about opening a retail store. Remember, this was pre-Dell. One manufacturer was even willing to front most of the capital because the company was trying to build storefront distribution channels. Though in retrospect, the opportunity would have been relatively short-lived. For about 10 years, that business might have thrived. If I had done more than just think about it, that is. The list goes on. Years ago, a friend decided the home healthcare industry was poised to take off. He asked me to go into business with him. I thought about it a lot. Even helped him flesh out his financials and refine his startup plan, but I never pulled the trigger. Today, he has locations in 15 cities. The only connection I have with home healthcare is that I will someday be a customer. Sure, I can console myself by thinking that hindsight is perfect. I can console myself by saying that I had no way of knowing how those opportunities would turn out. But those rationalizations are only partly true. even at the time, I felt sure those were great ideas. Instead of acting, though, I let idea stay a noun. I didn't make idea a verb. Fitness and computers and home health care weren't really ideas because ideas without action aren't ideas. They're regrets. Every day, people like me, people like you, let hesitation and uncertainty stop them from acting on an idea. Fear of the unknown and fear of failure are what stopped me. And they may be what stops you, too. Think about a few of the ideas you've had, whether for a new business, a new career, or even just a part-time job. In retrospect, how many of your ideas could have turned out well, especially if you had given the opportunity your best effort? Would a decent percentage have turned out well? My guess is yes. That's why you absolutely must trust your analysis, your judgment, and even your instincts, and act on that trust. You certainly won't get it right all the time, but if you let idea stay a noun, you will always get it wrong. You will never achieve your goals if your approach is to wait. Don't just have a bias for action. Be active. Be active doing the things that are most likely to help you achieve your goals. If your goal is to become extremely wealthy, get started on your entrepreneurial journey. That's not a sure path to wealth, but it is the most realistic. If your goal is to advance your career, determine what matters most to your organization and start finding ways to make a quantitative difference in that aspect of the business. That's not a sure path to promotion, but it is the most realistic. If your goal is to drop a few pounds, for gosh sakes, stop eating more calories than you burn. That is the sure path to weight loss. Set a goal. Then look at what is required to achieve that goal. What you need to do may not be what you want to do, and that's okay. Let everyone else take an unrealistic approach, and then wonder why they aren't achieving more. Be unrealistic when you set a goal, and then be realistic about how you will achieve that goal. Then your goal will become realistic because you have a plan in place that will allow you to achieve that goal. Dream as big as you like. Then make sure your plan matches your dream. So now, let's get started.
Chapter 5. To gain incredible willpower, need less willpower. The purpose of this book is to help you achieve huge goals. But accomplishing a huge goal takes time. So let's start small. Success leads to motivation, leads to more success, leads to more motivation, creates an awesomely virtuous cycle. So why not gain some immediate successes that will motivate you to knock off even bigger goals? And while we're at it, let's do so in a way that helps you develop an attribute most people feel they struggle with, willpower, and in the process, make willpower irrelevant. Are we trying to accomplish multiple things at once? Absolutely. The best processes not only let you achieve an immediate goal, but also help you gain skills and confidence that allow you to achieve other goals. So let's start simple and lay out a strategy you can begin using tomorrow. How to have your most productive day ever. What if you need to complete a major project? What if you need to tackle a task you've been putting off? What if you desperately need to crank out a ton of work in a short period of time, yet you never seem able to find that time? What if you need to declutter your house or turn your backyard jungle into a paradise or shoot, you pick the task, professional or personal. What we need is a Monster Energy Extreme Productivity Day trademark. Okay, it's not actually trademarked, nor is Monster Energy currently sponsoring me, but hey, I'm always open to opportunities. Keep in mind that the following doesn't make sense as an everyday routine. Try to channel your inner Marissa Meyer and you'll flame out in a matter of days. But on an occasional basis, an extreme productivity day, Okay, I've already given up hoping the folks from Monster Energy will call. Is the perfect cure for the I am never going to get this done flu. Let's say you have a major task that will take you 11 or 12 hours to complete. Here are the steps to get everything done in one day. Step 1. Let everyone know you won't be available. Interruptions are productivity killers, so letting people know you're doing something special and will be out of reach for a day is an absolute must. At a minimum, tell coworkers and family, but don't forget to tell important clients or other people who normally expect you to respond to them. Send an email a couple days before your EPD. Explain that you will be tied up on that day and you'll respond to their calls, emails, etc., first thing the following morning. Some people will contact you before your EPD. Others will mentally note that you can't be reached. Either way, it's all good. And you get an additional benefit from telling certain people what you plan to do that day. The people whose opinion you value will know what you intend to accomplish, and they will know if you don't succeed. Peer pressure, when applied to accomplishing a short-term task and not a huge Appalachian Trail-worthy goal, can be a great motivator. Use it. Peer pressure doesn't have to be pressure. Quick note about peer pressure. The influence others have on you doesn't have to manifest in the form of pressure. Catherine Winnick is the star of the TV series Vikings. She plays fan favorite Queen Lagertha, and she's also the queen of making plans. "I strongly believe in life plans," she told me. "I've been working on a life plan since I was 14. I set goals and keep them on my desktop so whenever I open it, they're right in front of me. Some of the things I've dreamed about have come true. I'm an actress. I've been able to help women. I'm working with different charities to help support young girls and women. All of those things are a part of my life plan. Recently, I even hosted a vision board party. I don't know if those exist. I just asked some of my friends over, and each of them used words and pictures to put together their dreams and goals." When I told my wife about Catherine's vision board party, I couldn't help but share because it's the coolest idea ever. She got a group of friends together and held her own. They loved it, but she made sure the outcome was not just dreams, but concrete plans to accomplish goals. Step 2. Decide how long you will work. Don't create a plan based on, "I'll work as long as I can," or "I'll work as long as I feel productive." Set a concrete target. Commit to working for 12 hours, or however long a time frame you choose. Why? For one thing, an EPD isn't about how you feel. An EPD is about getting things done, not wimping out because you get bored or tired. 2, the longer the time frame you set, the quicker the early hours seem to go by. When I worked in a factory, we typically worked 8-hour shifts. The hours before lunchtime dragged, and the last couple of hours of each day always felt like death. But when we worked 12-hour shifts, the morning hours somehow seemed to fly by. Something about knowing you'll be working for a long time allows you to stop checking the clock. It's as if you naturally find your zen workplace. When you know you're in for a long haul, your mind automatically adapts. Trust me. It works. Step 3. Totally commit to how long you decided to work. You know what happens. Once you decide a task should take 4 hours, it somehow ends up taking 4 hours, even when it should actually have taken only 2 hours. It's natural to fill extra time with stuff. Think of it as the bigger house syndrome, where we somehow manage to fill a much larger house with furniture and then think we need an even bigger house. The opposite happens when a deadline seems too aggressive. We find ways to strip out the non-essential and get things done much more quickly than we could have imagined. Don't just set a deadline. Totally commit to hitting that deadline. And feel free to play any mental games that help. Make a bet with someone else or make a bet with yourself where losing means you have to do something you really don't want to do. In short, make the stakes personal. Find a way to be invested in the outcome, not just professionally, but personally. Step 4. Start your EPD at an unusual time. Have you ever taken a long car trip and left at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock a.m.? The first few hours always fly by because you stepped outside your norm. The same trick works for an EPD. Start at 4 o'clock a.m. Or indulge your inner night owl, starting at 6 o'clock p.m. and working through the night. Either way, those first few hours will fly by. An EPD is not a normal day. Set the stage for atypical by breaking free of your usual routine. Step 5. Delay and space out your rewards. Say you like to listen to music when you work. On an EPD, keep the music turned off for the first few hours. That way, when your motivation starts to flag, a little music will provide a great boost to your morale. Whatever ways you typically tend to treat yourself, think of those treats as personal productivity bullets. If you use all your ammunition too early, you'll have nothing left when you really need it. Whatever typically carries you through your workday, hold off on it for a while. Delayed gratification is always better gratification and better motivation. Step 6. Refuel before you think you need to refuel. When you're exercising, waiting until you're thirsty to get a drink means you're already dehydrated. The same is true when you work. Plan to eat or snack a little earlier than normal. If you sit while you work, stand up long before your butt gets numb. If you stand, sit long before your legs start to ache. When you allow yourself to feel discomfort, your motivation and resolve will weaken. So do everything possible to keep that from happening. Speaking of food, plan meals wisely. Don't take an hour-long lunch break. Prepare food you can eat quickly without lots of organizing or a mess. The key is to refuel, recharge, and keep rolling. Remember what Isaac Newton said. A productive body in motion tends to stay in productive motion. Okay, maybe that's not a direct quote, but still. That's why you should. Step 7. Take productive breaks, not relaxation breaks. Momentum is everything on an EPD and on every other day. Don't take a walk or watch a little TV or check out your friend's latest humble brags on Facebook. You will definitely need to take breaks, but those breaks should reinforce your sense of activity and accomplishment. Pick a few productive tasks you like to perform and gain a sense of accomplishment from, and use those for your breaks. Spending even a few minutes in the land of inactivity weakens your resolve. Step 8. Take your breaks at a counterintuitive moment. When you take a break, don't stop when you complete a particular task. Stop in the middle. That approach works in the middle of an EPD or at the end of a workday. The key is to take a break or end the day by leaving yourself a fun place to start back up. Why? Stopping in the middle of doing something awesome or stopping right before you'll start doing something awesome ensures you'll avoid the temptation of procrastination. Stopping short ensures you'll ignore all the enticing distractions that inevitably pop up when your motivation is flagged. Stopping short allows you to instantly focus and concentrate when you resume whatever you were doing. You won't be able to help diving right in because you'll be too excited, and that initial enthusiasm will positively affect the rest of your day. Here's an example. Say you're Kevin Jarre, and you're writing the screenplay for the movie Tombstone. It's late in the day, and you just finished writing the scene where Wyatt Earp tells the bedridden Doc Holliday, played by a movie-stealing Val Kilmer, that he needs to leave for a showdown with Johnny Ringo. Wyatt knows he's no match for Ringo. Doc does, too. Doc desperately wants to help, but is obviously too sick. As Wyatt leaves, it's clear they know they will never see each other again. If you're Kevin, should you then jump right into writing the next scene? Shoot, no. You should save it for tomorrow, because that scene opens with Ringo noticing a shadowy figure walking out of the trees. And just as the sunlight hits the unknown figure's face, he says to Ringo, I'm your Huckleberry. To our, and Ringo's surprise, it's not Wyatt, it's Doc. Sneak off to YouTube and watch that scene. I'll wait. If you're Kevin, how excited are you to write that scene? You can't wait because it's a scene that will make the movie and define the character of Doc. The words just pour from you. And if you're Kevin and you write Doc looking down at a dying Johnny Ringo and saying, I'm afraid the strain was more than he could bear, you know you've nailed an awesome scene, and that success makes you want to keep writing. Within minutes, success ensures that your day and your motivation level is made, all because you started your day in a very fun place. If you stop after you've just finished something significant or major, if you stop when you feel you've crossed the finish line and are nearly spent, it can feel extremely difficult to move on to whatever is next, whether you need to do that minutes, hours, or even a day later. Step 9. Don't stop until you're done, even if finishing takes longer than expected. Stopping short is an easy habit to form. If you quit this time, what will stop you from quitting the next time? Answer, pretty much nothing. Quitting is a habit. Staying the course is also a habit. Make sure your first EPD is the first block in the foundation of a great new habit, achieving what you want to achieve. Finishing what you start, achieving what you set out to achieve, also produces a fun side benefit. Accomplishing more than you may have thought possible unconsciously resets your internal limit on your output. We all have a little voice inside that says, I've done enough, or I'm exhausted. I just can't do more. But that little voice lies. We can always do more. Stopping is a choice. Don't just take it from me. Take it from Ray Kerr, whose 12-year Navy career included 10 years as a SEAL. SEALs are the kings of pushing beyond the possible. Basic underwater demolition SEAL training includes the aptly named Hell Week, a grueling 5.5-day stretch when each SEAL candidate sleeps a total of only about 4 hours, runs more than 200 miles, and does physical training for more than 20 hours each day. Here's the thing, Ray told me, about being done. When you truly have nothing left in the tank, you either black out, pass out, or die. That's it. Otherwise, you have more in you. It's all about getting past your comfort zone. We always have more gas in the tank. We just don't think we do because no one wants to run on reserve. They don't want to go past what they think is their limit. Winning is a mindset. Refusing to give up is a mindset. When you learn that you can do more than you thought in one aspect of your life, you can apply that to every other area of your life. Get out and do things that are hard. Refuse to quit. Push past your comfort zone. Over time, that ability will become a habit, and you'll accomplish a lot more than you ever believed you could. Success is a mental game. Learn to win the mental game, and you can do anything. An EPD helps you learn to win the mental game. An EPD automatically ratchets your internal limits to a higher level. And after a few EPD, maybe even just one, you'll perform better every normal day as well, because you will have unconsciously shut down that little voice in your head and raised your own performance bar. And isn't your performance bar the only measurement that truly matters? How to have your most productive week ever. Now let's go a little bigger. Let's look at making every week more productive. This time, instead of taking advice from me, we'll follow the routine of a successful CEO. Again, you can apply this to any situation, professional or personal. If you're a stay-at-home parent, your family is your job, arguably more important than any work. Jim Whitehurst is the president and CEO of Red Hat, one of the largest and most successful providers of open source software. Before that, he was the chief operating officer of Delta Airlines. Before that, he was a director and vice president of Boston Consulting Group. So, yeah, he knows a little about personal productivity, and if it's one of your goals, how to climb the corporate ladder. Here's what Jim does, and what you should try. Step 1. Every Sunday, map out your week. Every Sunday evening, Jim sits down with his list of important objectives for the month and year. Those goals inform the upcoming week and help keep him on track. While long-range goals may not be urgent, they are important, and if you aren't careful, the important can easily be pushed aside by the urgent. Then he looks at his calendar for the week. He knows what times are blocked out by meetings, etc. Then he looks at what he wants to accomplish and slots those tasks into his to-do list. The key is to create structure and discipline for your week. Otherwise, you'll let things happen to you instead of making things happen. Otherwise, you'll let urgent push aside what is truly important. Step 2. Actively block out task time. You already schedule meetings and appointments. Go a step further and block out time to complete specific tasks. Slot periods for write new proposal or craft presentation or review and approve marketing materials. If you don't proactively block out that time, those tasks will slip. Or those tasks will get interrupted. Or you'll lose focus. Whatever the reason, important tasks will never be completed. I love David Allen's getting things done methodology, but success isn't based on getting things done. Success is based on getting important things done. Step 3. Follow a realistic to-do list. Once upon a time, Jim created to-do lists, but he didn't assign time to each task. What happened? He always had more items on his to-do list than he could accomplish, and that turned his to-do list into a wish list. If you have 6 hours of meetings scheduled today and 8 hours of tasks on your to-do list, those tasks won't get done. Assigning realistic time frames forces you to prioritize. Assigning realistic time frames also helps you stay focused. When you know a task should take only 30 minutes, you'll be more aggressive in weeding out and ignoring distractions. Step 4. Default to 30-minute meetings. Whoever invented the one-hour default in calendar software wasted millions of people hours. Most subjects can be handled in 30 minutes. Many can be handled in 15 minutes. Especially if everyone who attends knows ahead of time that the meeting will last only 15 minutes. Don't be a slave to the default settings on your calendar tool. Schedule an hour only if you absolutely know you need an hour. Step 5. Stop multitasking. During a meeting, especially an hour-long meeting, it's tempting to take care of a few mindless tasks. Who hasn't cleaned up their inbox during a meeting? The problem is that splitting your focus makes those meetings less productive. Even though you're only doing mindless stuff, still, you're distracted, and that makes you less productive. Multitasking is a personal productivity killer. Don't try to do two things sort of well. Do one thing really, really well. Step 6. Obsess about leveraging edge time. Probably like you, Jim's biggest downtimes during the workday come when he drives to work, when he drives home, and when he's in airports. He focuses extremely hard on how to productively use that time. He almost always schedules calls for his drive to work. It's easy. He takes the kids to school and drops them off at a specific time. Then he can do a call from 8 to 8:30. He typically doesn't schedule calls for the drive home, so he can use that time to return calls he missed during the day, especially to people who are on the West Coast. At the airport, he uses Pocket, a browser plugin that downloads articles. Loading 10 articles ahead of time ensures that he has plenty to read, plenty he wants to read while he's waiting in the security line. Look at your day. Identify the downtimes. Then schedule productive things you can do during that time. Call it edge time, because using it well can create a major productivity edge. Step 7. Track your time. Once you start tracking your time, you'll be amazed by how much time you spend doing stuff that isn't productive. You don't have to get hyper-specific. The info you log can be a summary of activities, not a minute-to-minute diary. Tracking time was an eye-opening experience for Jim, and one that has really helped him focus. Step 8. Be thoughtful about lunch. Your lunch may take an hour, or 30 minutes, or 10 minutes. However long it takes, be thoughtful about what you do. If you like to eat at your desk and keep chugging, great. But if you benefit from using the break to recharge, lunch is one time when multitasking is, in fact, productive. You can network, make connections, build bridges between people and departments, but not if you go out to lunch with the same people every day. Pick 2 days a week to go out with people you don't know well, or take a walk, or do something personally productive. Say you take an hour for lunch each day. That's 5 hours a week. Be thoughtful about how you spend all those hours. You don't have to work, but you should make whatever you do work for you. Step 9. Protect your family time. Jim admits he's something of a workaholic. I know very few CEOs, in fact, I know no CEOs who are not workaholics. So he's become very thoughtful about his evenings. When he gets home from work, it's family time. They have dinner as a family, and he and his wife help the kids with their homework. He completely shuts off work. No phone, no email. Generally speaking, Jim has 2 hours before the kids need to get ready for bed. During that time, he's there. Then he can switch back on. He's comfortable leaving work at 5 or 5:30 because at 8 or 9 o'clock he knows he will be able to re-engage with work. Every family has peak times when its members can best interact. If you don't proactively free up that time, you will often slip back into work mode. Either be working or be home with your family. Don't just be there. Be with your family. Step 10. Start every day right. Jim exercises first thing in the morning, partly to stay fit, but also because exercise is energizing. Research shows that moderate aerobic exercise can improve your mood for up to 12 hours. So why not exercise first thing and take advantage of being in a good mood for the rest of the day? Research also shows that exercise boosts energy. Why not take advantage of a natural energy surge when you probably need it the most? Jim gets up early and runs. Then he cools off while he reads the newspaper. And he gets downstairs before his kids do so he can eat breakfast with them. Try it. Not only will you get an energy boost from exercising when you wake up, but being efficient and productive in the morning will set the stage for the rest of your day. Getting something productive done right away is fun, and it's motivating. Success leads to motivation, leads to more success, leads to more motivation. So why not get your virtuous cycle started right away? Quick sidetrack. How to have the most productive mindset ever. So far, we've looked at things you can start doing to help you achieve more and to generate the motivation to keep achieving even more. But sometimes, subtraction is the best addition. Sometimes what you stop doing can be just as effective as what you start doing differently. Want to get more done than the average person? Stop thinking the way the average person does. Step 1. Stop making excuses for doing less. Norman Mailer said, "Being a real writer means being able to do the work on a bad day." Say you're a manager. When you're having a bad day, are you a great leader? If not, you're not a real leader. Or say you're a nurse. When you're having a bad day, are you as focused, as attentive, and as caring? If not, you're a nurse in title, not in fact. If you want to succeed, you can't make excuses. Forge ahead. Establishing great habits takes considerable time and effort. Success and achievement are habits, and it's incredibly easy to instantly create a bad habit by giving in, even just once. Plus, the moment you make an excuse for doing less is the moment you stop the virtuous cycle of motivation in its tracks. Without achievement, there is no motivation. There are just excuses. Step 2. Stop letting disapproval or even scorn stand in your way. Work too hard, strive too hard, appear to be too ambitious, try to stand out from the crowd. It's a lot easier and much more comfortable to reel it in so that you fit in. Pleasing the average performing crowd is something you simply can't worry about. You may think about it, but then you have to keep pushing forward. And yes, I know that's hard. I struggle with it too. To succeed, hear the criticism, take the shots, endure the laughter or derision or even hostility, and stick to measuring yourself and your efforts by your own standards. Seemingly, every successful person has faced tremendous criticism and rejection. Stephen King's first book was rejected by 30 different publishers. Soichiro Honda flunked his interview with Toyota and decided to make scooters. Lucille Ball was told by acting teachers to try another profession. If you're trying to do something different, if you're trying to be different, other people will think you're odd. That's okay. Do what you want to do. That's the only way to achieve what you want to achieve. Step 3. Stop letting fear hold you back. An old client of mine is an outstanding and extremely successful comic. Audiences love him. He's crazy good. Yet, he still has panic attacks before he walks on stage. He knows he'll melt down, sweat through his shirt, feel sick to his stomach, and all the rest. It's just the way he is. So, just before he goes on, he takes a quick shower, puts on fresh clothes, drinks a bottle of water, jumps up and down, and does a little shadow boxing. He's still scared. He knows he'll always be scared. He accepts it as part of the process. Pre-show fear is part of the deal, so he manages it and keeps moving forward. Anyone hoping to achieve great things gets nervous. Anyone trying to achieve great things gets scared. To succeed, you don't have to be braver than other people. You just need to find the strength to keep moving forward. Fear is paralyzing, but action creates confidence and self-assurance. Step 4. Stop waiting for inspiration. Most people wait for an idea. Most people think creativity happens. They expect a divine muse to someday show them a new way, a new approach, or a new concept. And they wait and wait and wait. Occasionally, great ideas do just come to us. Mostly, though, creativity is the result of effort, toiling, striving, refining, testing, and experimenting. The work itself results in inspiration. Don't wait for ideas. Don't wait for inspiration. Big ideas most often come from people who do, not people who dream. Step 5. Stop turning down the help you need. Pretend you've traveled to an unfamiliar country. You know only a few words of the language and you're lost and a little scared. Would you ask for help? Of course. No one knows everything. No one is great at everything. Yet most people soldier on and hope effort will overcome a lack of knowledge or skill. And it does, but only to a point. Ask for help. Asking for help is a sign of strength and is the key to achieving a lot more. Ask Danny Garcia, co-founder of Seven Bucks Productions with Dwayne The Rock Johnson. One of Dwayne's keys to success is he can detach his ego completely and care solely about who has the best answers, Danny says. He's extremely coachable. He's really coachable in wrestling. As an actor, he's really coachable. He's totally detached from the ego side of decision-making. When you're talented and coachable and willing to find the best answer, no matter who has it or where it comes from, that's extremely powerful. Take a step back. And don't just decide where you want to go. What and who can help you get there? Step 6. Stop stopping. Successful people finish unless there's a very, very good reason not to finish, which, of course, there almost never is. How to go the true extra mile, Seinfeld style. I know some of this might sound hard. I know some of this might sound too difficult, especially because very few people apply this level of focus and routine to their lives. But take a step back and consider the following sentence. Though obvious, like most truisms, it's also easy to forget. Successful people are successful because they do things differently from other people. See? Obvious, but also true. To achieve differently, you must act differently. Again, I know that sounds obvious, but look around you. How many people do you work with who get to work at 9 when almost everyone else comes in? Leave at 5 when almost everyone else leaves? Take their lunch breaks like everyone else? Half-ass their way through meetings and assignments and projects? Basically, do what everyone around them does. You know plenty of people like that, right? Yet they're the same people who complain because they don't get opportunities, don't make enough money, don't get promoted. Basically because they get treated like every other employee. But they act like every other employee. Why should they be treated differently? They aren't different. Yes, they're all individuals, but from a professional point of view, they're essentially generic. Everyone says they go the extra mile. Almost no one actually goes there, though. And when someone does actually go there, they usually think, wait, no one else is here. Why am I doing this? And they leave, never to return. That's why the extra mile is such a lonely place. That's also why the extra mile is a place filled with opportunities. Hard work is a definite differentiator, but there are other ways to be different. You don't have to come to work early. You don't have to stay late. You can make the extra phone call. You can send the extra email. You can do the extra research. You can help customers before they even think to ask. You can go beyond just telling your employees what to do. You can show them what to do and work beside them. Every time you do something, think of one extra thing you can do, especially if other people aren't doing that one thing. Sure, it's hard, but that's what will make you different. And over time, that's what will make you incredibly successful. For example, you could take the Jerry Seinfeld approach. Yep, another Jerry example, and why not? You could do a lot worse than to emulate the most successful comedian of all time. In an interview with Scott Feinberg for the Hollywood Reporter's Awards Chatter podcast, Seinfeld describes his keys to success, which, not coincidentally, are three keys to success in any field. To Seinfeld, success is based on work and thought and preparation. Those are givens. Those are also the building blocks of confidence. Then he adds three further elements. Inspiration. You have an idea. You come up with something new, something original, or even just a different take or perspective on a product or service. That's kind of the easiest step if you're a creative person, Seinfeld says. You get ideas. They just come to you. You can't create them. You just wake up and your inbox has got something in there and you go, oh, look at that. Of course, as we've discussed, an idea without action isn't really an idea. It's just a dream. So next comes execution. Execution is pretty obvious, Seinfeld says. You have the idea, now you execute the idea. Is this what you wanted to do? Is this a good version of what that idea was? According to Seinfeld, the execution stage is where most people stop. They have a good idea, they execute the idea, and then they cross their fingers, he says. And they really hope that it works, and they have lots of excuses ready for when it doesn't. But then what? Detail. The third piece of success in a creative field is detail, he explains. Obsessive detail. If you think about it, success in every field requires some level of creativity. If you aren't coming up with new ideas, new approaches, or new processes, then you're just doing what everyone else already does. Detail to Seinfeld is as important as inspiration and execution. They're three equal-sized pieces of the success puzzle. This happens to every comedian every night, he says. I have bits, I have jokes, they work, they never miss. It's a good joke, people like it. Every time I say it in this way, it always works. But if I just have a slight catch in my throat in the middle of one word, just that little thing in the first syllable, it's gone. It's gone. The audience is like, what happened? Did he get nervous or distracted? Something went wrong. In comedy, jokes are extremely fragile things because they have to be exactly right to work. That's true in every profession. Execution is important, but obsessive attention to detail, making sure you get it right every time for every colleague or boss or customer, is critical. Comedians can't afford an otherwise surefire joke failing, just as businesses can't afford otherwise reliable processes or products failing. Detail is everything. And that's true even in a business where creativity is not just appreciated, but required. If you were a guest star on my show and you came on for a week, Seinfeld says, if you missed a word, one word in the lines that we've written for you, you're going to get a look from me. Because that's the way we executed the series. You're only as good as you are today, right here, right now, in this moment. And that's why detail matters as much as, or more than, ideas and execution. A great idea is great only when you execute that idea incredibly well. Granted, incredible execution requires focus and discipline. But what if you feel like you lack willpower? What if you have yet to tap into the power of success leads to motivation, leads to more success, leads to more motivation? What if you're afraid that you don't have the willpower to be more productive for a day or a week or to go the extra mile? Never fear. Help is here. How to have willpower without needing willpower. Willpower isn't something you either have or don't have. Willpower is sometimes a function of necessity. There are lots of things you can do when your back is against the wall and you feel you have no choice. More often, willpower is a function of success. It's easy to stay the course when you feel good about what you're accomplishing. Willpower is also a muscle that can be developed. The more you exercise it, the stronger it gets. And that's great. But what if you need help doing the things you need to do right now? What if you can't wait for the virtuous cycle of motivation to kick in? You're in luck. Here are some tips you can start using today to help you accomplish what you want to accomplish without needing to possess incredible willpower, or really any willpower at all. The process starts with designing your life so it supports your goals. Step one, eliminate as many choices as possible. We all have a finite store of mental energy for exercising self-control. Some of us have less, some have more, but we all eventually run out of willpower steam. That's why the more choices we need to make during the day, the harder each one is on our brain, and the more we start to look for shortcuts. If you like, call this the oh screw it syndrome. Then we get impulsive. Then we get reckless. Then we make decisions we know we shouldn't make, but it's like we just can't seem to help ourselves. In fact, we can't help ourselves. We've run out of the mental energy we need to make smart choices. That's why the fewer choices you are forced to make, the smarter the choices you can make when you do need to make a decision. Say you want to drink more water and less soda. Easy. Keep three water bottles on your desk at all times. Then you won't need to go to the refrigerator and make a choice. Or say you struggle to keep from constantly checking your email. Easy. Turn off all your alerts. Or shut down your email and open it only once an hour. Or take your mail program off your desktop and keep it on a laptop across the room. Make it hard to check. Then you're more likely not to. Or say you want to make smarter financial choices. Easy. Keep your credit card in a drawer, and then you can't make an impulse buy. Or require two sign-offs for all purchases over a certain amount. Then you will have to run those decisions by someone else, which probably means you'll think twice about making the purchase and won't even bother to ask. Choices are the enemy of willpower.